Ladies and gentlemen, it's 3 p.m. Can I ask the committee members to take their seats, please? The Health and Human Services Committee will come to order. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Burton?
Here.
Representatives Altman?
Here.
Botana?
Here.
Brown? Buchanan? Davis?
Here.
Duran?
Here.
Harrison?
Here.
Brandt?
Here.
Coster?
Here.
Masullo is excused. Mello?
Here.
Persons Mullica?
Here.
Rayner?
Here.
Rizzo?
Here.
F. Robinson?
Here.
W. Robinson?
Here.
Cerulli?
Here.
Skidmore?
Here.
Tant?
Here.
Yarborough? A quorum is present.
Thank you, Cheryl. Members and audience members, would you do us all a favor and silence your cell phones so that we don't have ringing during the meeting? We have one bill today, members. Representative Andrade will present the bill, Vaccinations During Public Health Emergencies by Andrade. Representative Andrade, you are recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 7B repeals from statute the authority of the Department of Health to unilaterally and without prior legislative approval subject Floridians to forced vaccination during a declared state of emergency.
Thank you. Members, do we have questions for Representative Andrade? Representative Duran, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for being here. I wanted to ask you, with respect to your bill, the bill language, it simply just takes out the word vaccinated. In the bill, the state health officer, in a declared public health emergency, in where we start with this language that they can, an individual may be examined, tested, and then you're removing vaccinated, but then you're keeping in examined, tested, treated, isolated, or quarantined. With respect to vaccinated, can you kind of elaborate a little bit on your thinking on why we're just removing that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Duran, not to be technical, while yes, the word vaccinated, vaccination, and vaccinate are deleted from statute five times in this bill, it also deletes the word or one time and the word including one time as well. So just to be perfectly clear. But no, the whole perspective on this is we saw some significant concerns recently from folks who are worried about a situation where government officials come to their door and force them. This statute includes the terms by any means necessary, force them to be subjected to vaccination. This statute's never been used in this authority's never been used in this manner. And vaccination is really prospective. During a declared public health emergency, the focus should realistically be focused on treatment. Vaccination is preventative. If people are concerned about contracting a disease, vaccinations are publicly available. For the vast majority of illnesses, I think the vaccination for COVID has been a godsend for people who've been able to receive it. And at this point, millions upon millions of Americans have received it voluntarily, taken it voluntarily, including myself. The concept of a government official coming to your door and by any means necessary subjecting you to a vaccination that you aren't voluntarily taking yourself is just not a circumstance that I believe most Floridians would support or enjoy the idea of a government official doing that.
Follow up. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and thank you for your response. What I want to follow up a little bit on is that last statement you just made there. This state health officer in a public health emergency still can compel you to be examined, compel you to be tested, compel you to be treated, isolated, or quarantined for that public health emergency, but we're removing vaccinated from that list. Are you concerned by any of those that you're leaving in the bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Duran, no. I think this is a responsible approach. You have circumstances potentially where those other activities would be necessary in a declared public health emergency. There's just simply not a scenario where vaccination should be included.
Follow up. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to, on this last word that we have in here that I mentioned to you a couple times now, treated, treated as sort of a broad, I'd imagine a broad sort of concept. If we are removing vaccinations, and I think you had mentioned earlier, vaccinations being to prevent a disease, but I know there are therapeutic vaccinations. So in the event of somebody in so a good example of one that's a therapeutic vaccination, I think, is the retro, I forget the name of it, Regeneron. That's I think, a therapeutic vaccination. Are we talking about anything of that nature? If a therapeutic vaccination is administered during the treatment of somebody, does this bill in any way hinder or deal with that issue?
You recognize?
Representative Duran, I would probably want to engage with you a little bit more on the definition used in that scenario. I mean, I think vaccination is, again, like what we said, prescriptive. I mean, you have treatments that are prophylactic. You know, I received a monoclonal antibody treatment when I came down with COVID. And we've seen examples of, you know, monoclonal antibody treatments being provided to people who were potentially exposed as a prophylactic. But the term vaccine is, you know, very strongly understood to mean someone who is, you know, prior to infection. I think the best example is the distinction between isolation and quarantine that's still in this chapter. Isolation being the, you know, seclusion of someone who is infected versus quarantine being the seclusion of someone who might be infected. So pulling out vaccine this way is in no way confusing to practitioners in this realm, and I think everyone will fully understand exactly what the intent behind this repealer bill is.
Representative Davis, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. The state health officer was granted this authority in 2002. So why are we here today talking about removing that authority?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davis, we're here talking about this because we've seen significant examples of government overreach in the very recent future. And there is a growing concern. There's fear from, you know, everyday Floridians right now that government overreach is not going to stop. We haven't been in a declared state of emergency for several months in the state of Florida, but we've seen across the nation over the past year and a half declared states of emergency become more loosely defined and broadened over time. And the approaches being used unilaterally by one branch of government, the executive, be abused in that process. You know, by allowing for you know, the legislature to play a role and to be representatives of everyday Floridians in this one decision, I think it provides a lot of comfort to Floridians.
You're recognized.
Thank you for that answer. Removing this authority has a tendency to, for me, make the state health officer feel like this position has less authority. How does your bill not promote that the state health officer does not have the authority that he or she should have?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first and foremost, Representative Davis, this authority is granted under emergency circumstances only. And under an emergency, there are limited purposes and times where the executive gets to also act as the legislature. You know, emergency orders have the same force and effect as a legislative act during that declared state of emergency. So I don't believe that this is actually pulling back any authority that the executive ever has, because all authority from the executive is granted by the legislature in the first place. And this isn't an action that the executive's ever taken in Florida. And I don't believe that this action would ever be taken by an executive in Florida, at least not in the very near future.
Excuse me? Okay. Representative Skidmore, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Andrade, and great segue into my question, which is, if this pandemic, which killed 60,000 Floridians, did not trigger the state health officer from ordering the vaccine, under what scenario or circumstance do you see the state health officer needing to require or order vaccine. It would have to, well, in what scenario do you see that happening that would be more significant than this? And do you think that under those special emergency conditions that someone should have that authority?
You're
for
right.
The safety of the entire public.
I apologize, Representative Skidmore, for jumping in early. You recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Skidmore, the answer is none. There's no circumstance, I believe, where forced vaccination, essentially at gunpoint, by any means necessary, making non-compliance with this a second-degree misdemeanor, jailable for up to 60 days and, you know, a financial fine. I don't believe that there's any scenario where forced vaccination would be acceptable. I believe that under any emergency realistically contemplated, you know, treatment, isolation, quarantining, the ability of the, you know, the public health officer to direct pharmacies to go, you know, send prescriptions to a certain place, to direct manufacturing, to, you know, to address, you know, a pandemic appropriately, would ever involve forced vaccination.
You have a follow-up? You recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that answer. So I'm thinking of, like, A.G. Holly Hospital that we used to have in Lantana for tuberculosis, non-compliant tuberculosis patients. So people who were posing a risk to public health, they could be quarantined, isolated in a hospital. So is it your suggestion, then, that that is what the state should be doing, investing in sanatoriums where people will be isolated and quarantined in a situation that is way worse than this pandemic, but in which there's no opportunity to require vaccination? We would then have to house people, and would there be another arm of law enforcement that then would enforce, you know, that part of the sanatorium lockdown?
You recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Skidmore, I think the circumstances are apples and oranges. I'm not a historian, but I'm not sure when there was ever a declared state of public health emergency for TB. I believe that those were policies that were, you know, implemented with the proper oversight of the legislature. And again, those circumstances are not at all inhibited by this legislation. This legislation simply prevents the Department of Health from doing so unilaterally without any involvement from the legislature.
Okay. Have another question? You recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, to your point, then, there is still the opportunity for the legislature at some point to enact the requirement of vaccines.
You recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So long as the state maintains the police power under the U.S. Constitution, yes.
Representative Rainier, you recognized for a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. I have a question about something you said earlier. You indicated that, and if I'm misspeaking, please let me know, you indicated that there's been significant overreach with regard to that. Can you expound on what overreach has happened specifically in the state of Florida?
You recognized.
Thank you, Representative Rainer. Yes, I think we've seen significant overreach from the federal government in this space. I think the OSHA mandate under the guise of an emergency that took 2 months to implement is a perfect example of government overreach that's concerning Floridians every day.
Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question in regards to the ever-changing nature of this virus and the fact that apparently another wave is coming. How does this bill keep Floridians safe, especially if declaring a state of emergency triggers access to PPE product, like vaccine product, and other resources?
You recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tant, I think that Florida's COVID data to date, being the state with the lowest COVID transmissions in the country, is a perfect example of how we've been able to achieve this without ever using vaccination at gunpoint authority without legislative oversight. It's just not a necessary component of our pandemic response.
Thank you. Representative Rainier, you have another question? You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question in it. Representative, I know when we spoke about this bill, you indicated that there was concerns that people could be vaccinated at gunpoint. I feel that may be a little extreme, but can you kind of walk me through why you think your bill would cure something that I don't believe that has ever happened?
You're recognized.
Representative Rainer, the attempt at a cure in this bill is stemming from the symptom or the issue with everyday Floridians being concerned with government overreach. This bill simply provides a certain level of comfort to Floridians that the government's never going to show up at their door and by any means necessary, subject to, you know, them losing their liberty and being placed in a county jail, you know, being forced to be subjected to a vaccination.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, you know, I know that you and I had a conversation about case law Jacobson. So how does your bill not violate the Jacobson doctrine and rule?
You're recognized.
Well, Representative Rainer, I would challenge anyone to define a Jacobson doctrine or rule. The Jacobson decision from 1905 simply was a balance that the U.S. Supreme Court made between the 14th Amendment rights guaranteed to individual citizens and the state's police power. And again, that circumstance was not under an emergency authority. This was not unilateral action from an executive. The policies put in place that were contemplated in Jacobson in 1905 were statutorily, you know, provided policies that a local government decided to implement, again, as a policy. The whole process that led up to that Jacobson decision by the U.S. Supreme Court involve legislative action. All this bill does is remove the ability of the executive to act as both the legislature and the executive.
Additional questions? All right, seeing none, we have no amendments. We have a few individuals who'd like to provide public testimony. For those of you who are providing public testimony, we allow 3 minutes of public testimony, just so you know. Donna Lowry, who's a registered nurse. Ms. Lowry, you're welcome to come to the podium. And you're recognized.
Hi there.
You might want to pull your mic down. There you go.
Hi, I am Donna Lowry. I am a registered nurse in Brevard County. I worked at Parish Medical Center for 31 years. I am here today on behalf of every one of you. Every one of you. I am here today on behalf of your family members, those that have had COVID, those that have not survived COVID. On September 5th, Sunday, I was what we call floated. I'm an OB nurse. I was floated over to the medical floor. That's what happens. You get sent to another floor to help out. I was sent there to help out the charge nurse. I approached the nurse's station, and there was a coworker crying. I asked her what was wrong. I tried to comfort her. Apparently, her mother was a COVID patient in room 322. The hospitalist had approached her and told her that if her mother did not make significant improvement in a matter of 2 days or so, she would have to make the decision about the ventilator for her mom. She walked away to clear her emotions, and I asked my coworkers, why don't we use ivermectin here? Another doctor approached a hematology oncology physician, and she asked the same thing. Why don't we use ivermectin here? We then went into a staff lounge to comfort this coworker, and I asked her if her mother had received ivermectin prior to hospitalization, and she said no. I asked her if she was familiar with the FLCCC, Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance, Dr. Pierre Corey, Dr. Paul Merrick. I shared with her that my twin sister and her husband, my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law all had COVID and all did very well in spite of comorbidities with ivermectin. She wanted her mother to have ivermectin. She was too upset to go speak to the hospitalist about ivermectin. I said I would go do so. As nurses, if any of you have been in the hospital or you have a loved one that's been in a hospital, you want your family member's nurse or yourself, your nurse, to speak on behalf of you, to advocate for you. And that's what I did. I went to the doctor and I told him who I was and that I was advocating for for the patient in room 22's daughter. She also was the power of attorney and healthcare surrogate. I asked him if he was familiar with ivermectin, and he said, yes, we used it in my previous facility. He said, I don't know if we have it here. I said, well, I will call the pharmacist. I called our pharmacist, and she said, we have it, but it's not used for COVID. I said, yes, it is. She said, it is not used for COVID. I said, it is. I have family members that have done well. She said, well, if the hospitalist wants to okay it, you then have to go to the intensivist and get his final say. Yes, ma'am, I shall do that. And I went to him with another nurse as my witness. Prior to going to any of the doctors, though, I asked the family member, the coworker, if she believed in Jesus, and she said yes. I asked the other nurses that were with me if they believed in Jesus, and they said yes. And I then said, before we go forward, we are going to pray, and we are going to ask Jesus to make the way. We are going to ask Jesus to prepare the hearts of those that I am going to be speaking to. We prayed for her mom. We prayed over the use of ivermectin. Immediately, the hospital said yes. Immediately, the intensivist said yes. I'm sorry. I went back to the coworker, the family member, and I said, your mother can have ivermectin. The hospitalist ordered the ivermectin. The patient received one dose. The patient improved. For some reason unbeknownst to me, the patient did not receive any more doses of ivermectin.
Excuse me, Ms. Lowry, I hate to interrupt you.
Yes,
but I'll
get to my point. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. That was on a Sunday. On a Friday, I was suspended. On a Monday, I was terminated from Parish Medical Center after 31 years of a clean service. And the hospital CEO, George Mkhitaryan, has reported me to the Department of Health and to ACA, and he wants my nursing license removed for advocating. There was not any argument with any of the physicians. They immediately said yes, and the patient received the dose, and I was not the administering nurse.
Thank you, Ms. Lowry. Thank you for coming. Next, we have Nikki Celso, I believe, is the last name. And again, you're welcome to share whatever you'd like to share, but we'd like you to, if you can speak to the bill, that would be helpful. So you recognize Ms. Celso.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me speak. I have some problems with this bill as I studied it. Some of the issues that I have concerns about are the fact that it says isolation and quarantine. And if you look up the definition of isolation and quarantine, which is in, which is referred in the bill, 38.00315, it gives you all the definitions of this. My problem with this is that the CDC has what they call a shielding approach, which allows you to put elderly and people with severe medical problems in these isolation camps, which they're calling green zones. And we have one in Miami. And this bill, 7B, does not discourage that. That's my concern number one. My concern number two, in 381.00315, it also states in Section 5, subsection C, hold on, that you can vaccinate as, here it is. Test, treat, including vaccinations for communicable disease required before employment or administer to the premises or to comply with the isolation or quarantine. 7B does not take that out because it refers to this particular bill, the statutes. So those are my concerns. What I would like to see is verbiage saying that Floridians have sovereignty over their own body. I feel like I know what's best for me. My doctor knows what's best for me. Not a public health officer, not Congress, not the House, not the Senate, but my health care workers that work with me, that know my body, that has treated me for the 48 years I've been alive. You guys have never met me. And now you're coming up with bills underneath this Emergency Act telling me what's best for me. And this bothers me. This upsets me dearly. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Ashley Lyerly. Ms. Lyerly, is she here? She waves in opposition. She's with the American Lung Association in opposition. Members, we are now in debate on the bill. Do we have any debate on the bill? Representative Duran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative, thank you for being here and willingly presenting before us, taking our questions. You know, we were requested, some would say compelled, to be here this week for a special session the governor has called and legislative leadership has organized. And I am having a very difficult time understanding what is so special about this specific bill. When you look at what we're presented, we are talking about a piece of legislation that was passed over 20 years ago and has never been used. The current Surgeon General, or candidate for Surgeon General, has not at any point in time pointed out that he plans to use this legislation anytime soon. So I don't see where the emergency, the timing issues or concerns are there on that end. I didn't think the previous Surgeon General, who's just left, also, I don't believe he had ever at any point during the course of this pandemic pointed to this legislation as something that needed to be used and put into action. And so here we are talking about a specific piece of legislation that just repeals one specific word. And I agree with you, with the public testimony, that you can still be compelled to be quarantined. You can still be compelled to be treated. So why are we here spending time on this legislation when what we're really doing is just taking out a word that's a hot button word for the moment? This does nothing. I don't see what the emergency is, why we can't go and take care of this during regular session, but we are here spending what was a scheduled committee week to do something because a word is politically hot topic word right now. I can't support it. I don't see why I am here today listening to this, with all due respect to you, Representative, but I just don't see how this is done. And by the way, you know, it's important to think about the history of where this bill came from. This isn't new legislation. This was passed back in 2002, post 9/11, when people were receiving envelopes of anthrax. And so they needed tools in order to take on what was a potential emergency that would kill Americans. So this was passed by the Senate, by the House, unanimously, bipartisan support. And now here we are talking about a word when the rest of the legislation is also quite operative and important, but it's the word. I don't see it. I don't see what's so special and why we are here today. So I vote no.
Representative Rayner, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, Representative Andrade, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you reaching out to me this weekend to speak with me about this bill. And I'm looking at it from several perspectives. I understand being a Black woman, there are sensitivities where, you know, Black folks were forced to be sterilized. They were forced to be treated. And I thought about that when I was thinking about your bill. I thought about the history that our country has been rooted in, and how some of that is not nice and it's not good and it makes us feel uncomfortable. And then I begin to balance it about where we're at now and about how, in many ways our country has moved forward, and we can have another discussion about that, but also about where we're at with this specific pandemic. And I, read the Jacobson, decision. I read other articles, probably from people who are way smarter than me. And my concern, much to my colleague's point, is that we're here politicizing something that is an actual real health crisis. We, in the state of Florida, have not seen anybody held at gunpoint to get a vaccine. We have not seen folks who have used any means necessary to get vaccines. What we have seen is requirements. We have seen small businesses and companies as their prerogative, especially if they're, have federal contracts, to require their employees to get vaccines or to require having negative COVID tests to make sure people are safe. And it's concerning for me because this bill, as Representative Duran, as Representative Duran spoke about, this bill was crafted under the direction of President George W. Bush. And it is a bill that was to protect folks. And I find it hard for me to agree with this bill and to vote up on it when I feel that it could maybe be a little bit better. Maybe there's more checks and balances for the state health officer. Maybe there's not a unilateral. But I think that when we're thinking about, public safety, I think that we have to look at two things, and this is actually in the Jacobson opinion, whether the safety of the public is justified, this particular restriction, and whether it was enforceable by reasonable regulations. And the court answered yes to both of those questions. And it is only when, in the opinion of the Board of Health, was necessary for public health or public safety. And we have been in a pandemic. The governor has declared a state of emergency. I don't believe we're any longer in that state of emergency. But the issue that becomes for me is that I feel like we're here when we could be dealing in this in regular session, but I feel like we're here because, quite frankly, it's an election cycle year, and folks want to get reelected or elected to another office. And I think that it's troublesome to me to use the weight of the legislature to do that. And this is no, anything to you, because I appreciate your openness and your candor with me. I just find it, I'm not going to be able to vote up on this bill, but I do thank you. Like I said, we had a very good conversation, and I expressed the same concerns to you that I'm expressing now. It's very difficult for me, so I will have to be down on this bill.
Representative Yarbrough, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity. Thank you, Representative Andrade, for bringing this to us. I take a different view from that of my colleagues that have already spoken. I do support the bill. Just a few observations to support my support for the bill. In this legislative process, with most everything that comes before us, there's some exceptions, but with many things, we have to find a way to strike a balance among competing priorities. I'll be honest, I had considered before knowing we would come into special session and then seeing that this would be a bill that we would consider, I had considered also filing a similar bill, and mine actually would have included a little bit more. I'm going to support this today because I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. I would have offered maybe a definition that treatment not include vaccination. We also still have the piece in here that if an individual, this is in the text of the bill, but an individual, if they are unable or unwilling to be examined, tested, currently vaccinated, but that would be stricken under this, or treated for reasons of health, religion, or conscience, could still be subjected to isolation or quarantine. I would support removing that too. That's not before us today, but I'm just saying I would have a different version that I would put forward, but I still see this as striking a balance and as a good step for us to take. Yes, it hasn't been used in 20 years, but I would say that it could be just a matter of time before something like that would be used under a different state health officer or other state leadership officials. So I see this as an act related to freedom for Floridians. That's not a political point. That is truly what it is, because this is allowing individuals to make that choice, and it still allows some other things to remain in the statute. And the other thing, in researching Chapter 381, 381.0012 related to law enforcement officers, I've checked it again just to make sure I had it right, but it does say a court can issue a warrant at the request of the department, and it basically compels sheriffs, law enforcement officers, and any other local officials to help carry this out, which could mean that they show up to where an individual is and seek to carry that out. And the statute says through any means necessary. So I say we are very wise to put this to bed in this regard for this. I think it's a reasonable step, and we haven't seen it used, but I don't think we should wait until it is used to try to take some action. It's prudent to do it now, and I strongly support it. Thank you.
Members, additional debate? Representative Skidmore, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks, Representative Andrade. It's a good conversation for us to have. I really think so. But I'm just troubled by the conversation about vaccine and where we have gone as a nation. We have just eviscerated so many diseases. We have grown so much. We have believed in science. We have done so many things to protect our children in schools. And somehow, COVID-19 just blew it all up. So COVID, it stands for coronavirus disease. It's an acronym. 19 is the year that it was identified. We have been studying this coronavirus for years. So this vaccine that President Trump got us through warp speed isn't something that was thrown together in somebody's basement overnight. This is something that scientists have been doing for years, trying to perfect. And they did it. They did it because the country needed them to do it, and they rose to the occasion. And then somehow we decided that it wasn't the right public policy to require people to individually contribute to the health of the community, to contribute to public health. And now all of a sudden, this is more about political health than public health. And I really find it distasteful. I understand that you're responding to these outside voices and forces that feel like somehow we're imposing something on them new that's never been done before. For me, I want a public health official to have every tool he or she needs to protect me, my family, my community. If this hasn't been used in 20 years, that's great. I am confident that it didn't have to be. But 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to predict where we are today, and neither would anyone in this room. So to take that away from a person that we entrust to keep the public safe is troubling to me, and I won't be able to support it.
Representative Garrison, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I want to echo and give my support to the comments of my colleague, Chair Yarbrough. I couldn't have said any better, sir. I want to thank you for that. I would add just to that, Madam Chair, members, the argument that this statute has never had to be utilized, so we should leave it on the books, to me is insufficient, and I would subject not sufficiently compelling. Our system of government is predicated upon checks and balances, and a situation where any individual, whether it's a public health officer or the governor or anyone, but specifically in this situation, a public health officer who is unelected, would have the ability to proactively require something like this to happen to something that is as personal as someone's personal health, to me, quite frankly, is concerning. The fact that it hasn't been utilized, there's a reason it hasn't been utilized, because it's a power, quite frankly, that should not be utilized. And for that purpose, I would recommend support. While we all have issues, either pro or con, that we would do it a little bit differently, to Chair Yarbrough's point, I would think this is a good step, a common sense step. I'd be hard pressed to think of that many of the 21 million Floridians that this body represents would have issues with this, quite frankly. I can have a difficult time taking the politics out of it for a second, thinking that if we were sitting here today, that we would give such a power over an individual's person to someone who is unelected, whether Republican, Democrat, Independent, or anything in between. And so for that reason, I think this is a good first step. Commend you for bringing the bill. I support you, and thank you, the governor, for his support on it as well. Thank you.
Representative Persons Maluka, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair Burson. And thank you, Representative Andrade, for bringing this very important bill in front of us today. I also want to echo the remarks of my colleagues, Chair Yarbrough and Whip Garrison, that, you know, the status quo of law, of legislation, to me, that's not good enough. We learn over time, and we learn from the experiences that we each go through individually and collectively. A couple years ago, when we all together as one family faced COVID and considered the different solutions and responses, I'll bet you that the majority of the folks never foresaw the federal government overreaching in the way it has now and mandating the vaccine on millions of Americans. Even President-elect Joe Biden said, I don't think it's right to mandate. I don't know his exact words, but it made it sound like a mandate wasn't coming. And here we are. Grave circumstances, bad policy, unconstitutional action. We're learning from that action, and we're taking proactive measures in the state of Florida to ensure that that does not happen here. This isn't about whether a vaccine is good or bad. I personally made the choice. My family, we made the choice as to whether to get vaccinated or not. And I personally made the choice to get vaccinated. That was the best for me. But for those Floridians who have chosen, have made the choice that the vaccine is not best for them at this time, I don't know their circumstances. We all have different stories. We're all in different situation. The government should not challenge that decision in my case. But here we're not even talking about that. We're talking about a unilateral executive authority to vaccinate Floridians. As you so eloquently stated, Representative Andrade, the legislature can take action. There's still a means to have that happen in the future, but this is too much power to give to one person. And we've seen what too much power to one executive department can do to this nation, and we are facing that now. Thank you, and I'll proudly support this bill.
Additional debate, members, additional debate. Representative Davis, you're recognized in debate.
I said you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. I'm sitting and I'm listening, and I've heard a lot of different things, and I was just kind of jotting down what we heard. But I think the comment that Representative Andrade made that's becoming a sore part of the conversation is, I don't believe this authority would ever be taken by a state health officer. And then the narrative for me became forced vaccination versus public health crisis. Then we just got finished hearing some of our colleagues say the status quo of law and legislation, and then how we faced COVID-19 together, and COVID-19 was faced differently in different communities. Not all communities faced COVID-19 the same way, because we found out that in our underserved communities, COVID-19 hit us harder, and so it showed more health disparities than we've ever seen before. But I get back to, it feels like the conversation is just about mandating this vaccine. Mandating of this vaccine, and it's not, you're right, it's not. It's about the authority of this state health officer. and us not allowing the state health officer to have all of this power. You know, and as I'm sitting here listening to the conversation, this takes me back to the election bill that we just went through with someone having so much authority. Because during that election bill, we talked about the fraud that we never found. It was completely unfounded. So today it feels like we're talking about removing authority from someone who literally, in your words, hasn't used this authority or in 20 years. But for me, that isn't a good enough reason to say that we don't need that person to have the authority. Again, it feels like we're looking to solve a problem that's not really there. And for me, everything is timing. That election bill came after one of the best elections we had had, stated by our governor. And now we're dealing with talking about vaccine and the word and authority and removing this authority from a state officer as we're still suffering through COVID-19. We're not done with that. So it's all about timing. But the narrative of, and I've heard the statutes, the narrative of gunpoint, the narrative of, again, forced vaccination, to me the biggest concern is we're sending the wrong message to the public. Being someone who's sitting on this community that has suffered through COVID-19 herself personally, that's the wrong message. Vaccines are safe. Vaccines are effective. And some of you have said today that you chose to be vaccinated on your own. But the conversation we're having here today is not about that. It's simply about the authority that still should be retained by the state health officer, because obviously it was something that was strengthened by the public health emergency law in 2002. So my question is, why are we here today? Because again, this legislature has terrible timing talking about this. So just because timing is off, it feels like we're looking to answer or solve a problem that's not there. I will be no as well. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill, but I will not be able to support it today.
Representative Altman, you're recognized to debate.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do want to say a couple things about this bill. And one is, I don't think there's a single person on this committee, including the sponsor, that is politically motivated in bringing forth this bill. I think everyone has sincere interests. Those who support the mandate feel this is necessary to protect public safety. Those who are against the mandate feel that it's an overreach. I can tell you, I have personally met with many individuals who do not want to get this vaccine. And I've heard in their voice their intrinsic concern, their belief that they're doing the right thing, many of which you've spoken to their doctors. You've heard nurses, registered nurses, who have voiced concern. It's not my role to second guess that in a country that believes in individual freedom. And this bill, it's a good bill, does not prevent a vaccine mandate. If we find ourselves in a public emergency, in a crisis that is so bad that in order to protect our republic, we have to have vaccine mandates, this legislative body would have the authority to do that. And in today's world, if we were facing such emergency, it wouldn't take us long to get up here and do that, if that was necessary. So what this does, it basically raises the bar a bit. It raises the bar that says that the people that want to have this individual freedom, and there are many that sincerely have their concern and have a right for many reasons. And so I think what we're doing here is we're basically taking a step to ensure that the people that are out there, that we, as a body, in a way, this is a great compliment to us as a legislative body. The fact that the governor is willing to relinquish this responsibility and put it in our hands is a real compliment. And I think if ever, God forbid, we were facing such a situation, we would respond in the proper way. So this is a very pro-representative, legislative, participatory government measure. And I feel confident that I believe in our legislative process. And if we're not in any way jeopardizing the public well-being, and we're doing the right thing here.
Members, additional debate? Seeing none, Representative Andrade, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did just want to, address some concerns about why are we here just on this policy? Well, we're not just here on this policy. We're here in response to an overreach and abuse of authority that's been delegated already by a legislative body to the executive, and that being the emergency OSHA mandate that's being passed down right now by President Biden's White House. And there is an emergent circumstance, and it's not obviously the same emergent circumstance contemplated by the emergency authority that's in this statute. I had hundreds of nurses and doctors suspended this week in my district alone because of responses and concerns by employers trying to comply with OSHA and CMS mandates. If we don't act now, if we don't respond this week, we will see hundreds of Floridians losing their jobs because of an abuse of executive authority that was never fully granted by a legislative body. So to be able to say, yes, the separation of powers, reasonably applying that representative concern for actual Americans and Floridians, the fact that we can contemplate that in this small bill this week, I think is a good message to send to all of the state. And I apologize if it came off kind of fear-mongering when I said at gunpoint, but ultimately, by any means necessary, subject to the loss of your liberty, that contemplates at gunpoint. That is the ultimate contemplation of what this emergency authority granted. So for us to take this reasonable step to say, yes, we're going to inject some sanity back into this conversation about COVID-19, I think is a good step for us as a state to send.
Cheryl, please call the roll on HB 7B and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Brown?
No.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Davis?
No.
Duran?
No.
Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Persons Mullica?
Yes.
Rayner?
No.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
No.
W. Robinson?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Skidmore?
No.
Tant?
No.
Yarbrough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
13 yeas, 7 nays.
Shall the bill reported favorably. Members, yet again, I find myself chairing a committee that I think does a wonderful job of delving into the issues, asking questions. I want to thank those members of the public who are able to join us today. And that concludes our committee agenda. Representative Davis moves to rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.